This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/knowhow and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. Today on Know-How,
Networking 102, Part 1.
Welcome to Know How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next hour or so, we're going to be unzipping the knowledge bag of Ziploc thing.
Right. And then throwing some knowledge in there and Ziplocking it. In a freezer safe bag, right?
Seriously, we need to think out these examples before we actually start the show.
Nah, I'm still just impressed at how good we did our fusion. Almost.
Right? Okay,
give
folks.
It that.
Now, Networking 101 was a big hit. Now, you remember we brought back a bunch of knowledge that we dropped on you in past years because people were complaining that it was too spread out. We had, you know, this episode from 3 years ago and this episode from 2 years ago, and then we did this one 6 months ago. Well, in Networking 101, we showed you some of the basics of routing. We showed you how the internet actually works. We showed you the type of equipment that you should be purchasing for your home network. We want to get into a slightly more advanced topic. This is no longer just about buying something and installing it properly. We need you to start creating your own network, and that's what Networking 102 is all about.
That's right. But Padre, why do we have all these wires here?
You know, this
Wi-Fi is where it's at.
This is one of these things where this gets put in demand a lot more than you might think. We are going to be doing premise wiring. This is important because people, when they start to actually look at how their network is set up at their home, their apartment, their whatever it might be, they start to realize that, as you mentioned, Wi-Fi is everywhere, but there are some distinct advantages to having a network that is wired.
Especially if you are a gamer or you like to, I don't know, stream movies, stuff like that, like or pass big files between one computer to another computer, and there's actually walls between them, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, there's no question that Wi-Fi is convenient. We love Wi-Fi because it works with everything, our phones, our laptops, even our streaming set-top boxes. Wi-Fi has become so ubiquitous that people just kind of assume that they're going to get a Wi-Fi connection somewhere. Now, all of our laptops, if I want to use a wired connection and I'm using, say, an Ultrabook, I don't think there's an Ultrabook left out there that has an Ethernet jack built in. You have to use like USB or Thunderbolt to Ethernet.
Which we have encountered a lot of problems with that on our network because a lot of the guests that we call are on Skype. Mm-hmm. And they believe that typically Wi-Fi would be good enough. But when we're sending video back, we need video from them and we want decent audio for our shows. We much prefer a hardwired solution.
Yeah. You will see us anytime we've got a guest on and we start to notice little quality concerns with their stream from Skype. We'll always ask, are you on a wired or wireless connection? And so many of them, which is weird because they're all technologists as well.
Right.
They think, no, but I'm wireless, but it's going to be fine. It's like, well, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. What you don't see with Wi-Fi, because most of the time you're not doing things that are jitter sensitive, you're surfing the web, is that the connectivity and the throughput goes up and down wildly.
Right.
And that is, let's go down, you know, one of the reasons why you're going to want a wired network. That's because Wi-Fi is a shared spectrum. This is physics. This is nothing about a particular vendor or a particular technology. If you are broadcasting radio waves through the air to an antenna that will pick them up and then broadcast its own radio waves back to the base station, it means two things. One, it's asynchronous.
Right.
You know, it's unidirectional. Either you're speaking or you're listening. You can't do both at the same time unless you have two different radios that are set to different frequencies. Because if it's on the same frequency, you send two waves, they will cancel or interrupt with one another, right? So that's best case scenario. Worst case scenario is you get all these specs on the box that you buy, the router slash AP, that says this can do 1.4 gigabits per second, or there's a new 10 gig wireless standard for very short range. But that's a shared spectrum. So if you put this thing in a Faraday cage where it's got no outside interference, and you put two antennas at the ideal distance, yes, you can.
Best case scenario.
Absolute best case scenario.
But not real world.
Not even close to the real world. Because in the real world, not only do you have natural radio waves and natural radiation that will throw that off, you've got every other device that's trying to speak the same protocols on the same channels.
Right, right. And not all apartments or houses are created in the same way. Nope. And so in my situation, I need to have a cable where the cable comes into my home for the modem and the router is at the very front. And where my desktop computer is on the absolute opposite end of the house, which isn't very far, but there are like three or four walls in between. And there's a few different networks nearby too. So it's like, oh, well, you could just use, you could use 5 gigahertz if it's congested. And we've talked about it before. 5 gigahertz doesn't go through walls.
It just doesn't penetrate.
No, it doesn't penetrate. 2.4 is better, but there's a lot more congestion on that. So in my case, I have to have a hard line to my desktop. But the cable that I use, Padre, is probably 30 feet longer than I actually need because it came from the old no-hole.
So you just kind of took a used cable and plugged it in?
No. So me and Burke, we measured it out. So for the prior no-hole, which was in the Twit Brick House basement, I needed... needed like a 100-foot cable to go from where the internet was down to the, you know, the crevice that was the old no-hole in the basement. And I took that, we made that wire and it was perfect for that. But then I took it to my apartment and it is way too long.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It works, but it's way too long and I need to cut it. Otherwise, I have this bundle of cable underneath my desk. And so I'm guessing we're going to be making our own cables here.
We are in a bit. But first, let's go ahead and run down a couple more of the reasons why people are going to want this. I mean, first of all, yes, it's because Wi-Fi is a shared spectrum. And imagine this. If I've got one device connected to my base station, and let's say it guarantees me 1 gigabit per second, even though I'm not going to get it in the real world, let's say it does. So that one device is connected at 1 gig. Fantastic. But I add two devices. Now I have two devices speaking to the same base station. You might think, oh, it divides it in half. No, because you actually lose some from the overhead and from the collisions that those two devices are going to have. Because every time two devices or more transmit at the same time,
they'll bounce or cancel each other out.
It creates a cacophony. And what they do is they back off, they wait a random amount of time, and then they try to retransmit.
Okay.
And so, you know, two devices, it's going to happen, you know, a little bit. So let's say I get 1 gigabit per second for one device. Two devices might drop that down to 450 megabits per second.
Three devices.
Yeah, three devices, is that going to drop it down even further? Maybe 275 megabits per second. Four devices, maybe 100 megabits per second. Because the more devices you add, the more chance there is that they're going to be transmitting at the same time. And they're going to have to back off and retransmit.
It gets crowded so fast, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think there's just two people living, me and my wife, at my apartment. And we both have our phones. We both have our own laptops. She has an iPad. I occasionally have like my Fire tablet or something that I use. And then there's two Chromecasts. And I think, oh, the Nintendo Switch. And that's all using the Wi-Fi. So I've got like maybe a dozen devices at a time using the Wi-Fi at my home.
And that's just your devices. I mean, if you've got neighbors who are using Wi-Fi, which you do because everyone is, their
stupid
devices,
neighbors,
even though they're not connected to your network, they're still broadcasting on the same frequencies.
Yeah.
You also may have a microwave or a cordless phone or like a baby monitor that's operating in the frequencies that's used by Wi-Fi because it's unregulated spectrum.
Okay, so at my parents' house, there's a microwave. Whenever it was turned on or being in use, it would just kill the Wi-Fi. Yeah. Like
that's
straight
also,
on jammer.
Jammer, and also
that can't be good, right?
Cooking yourself. I hope you were never like as a kid staring right at the microwave.
Is that bad?
Well, because
I mean, my eyeballs would start to feel warm, but you know, when you're putting what is it, the little Peeps marshmallows in there,
they expand.
You're gonna have to watch them to see them explode.
Well, in any case, you know, when we're talking about wired versus wireless, when you start using a wired network instead of a wireless network, you're not hitting that constraint. If you hook up one device to a gigabit switch, you get 2 gigabits, one in each direction at the same time, because remember, it's 1 gig down, 1 gig up.
Right.
If I hook up two devices, each device has 2 gigs. I hook up three devices, each device gets 2 gigs.
Right.
I hook up 10 devices, and as long as my backplane, we talked about this in Networking 101, as long as the backplane is big enough, and most of them are because they have multiple terabytes per second that they can transfer, every device will get the full line rated speed because since they're traveling through cables instead of through the air, they're not sharing that spectrum. So that's the first reason why you're going to want wired instead of wireless.
Okay. And as much as a, I don't know, aesthetic pain wires might be, this is the practical solution for data transfer.
It really is. It was the de facto solution. I mean, yeah. You got to remember, Wi-Fi has only been around for about 15 years.
That's
as we
half
know
my
it.
Life, Padre.
I probably shouldn't have said that.
It's been pretty much my whole life.
Wow. No. Okay. Never mind. Okay. So here's another thing. Wi-Fi is inherently insecure. You are transmitting data, even if it's encrypted, over the air. Anyone who wants to put in the time to decrypt can do that. They can capture the packets and then decrypt at their leisure. Or if, let's say, they have access to the Wi-Fi network, they also have the key, your traffic is visible to them.
Right.
So, you know, it's inherently insecure. Wi-Fi, what we consider Wi-Fi, is to be a convenience technology. It's not a security technology, and it's definitely not something you would ever pass sensitive information over. People forget this. I mean, I can sit in a coffee shop, and I see people doing banking. I see people doing unprotected chat, and I'm thinking, you know, if I was a bad person, I could see all that.
You could do bad things. I mean, I guess the way you could explain it is having a conversation with somebody, like people can hear that. That's going through the air. But if I were to write a note and then slide it over to you,
precisely,
someone standing nearby wouldn't be able to see it.
And that's what a wired network is like, because I've got that one point of connection to my switch. My switch is connecting over to the other client that I might be talking to. And as long as no one's running a man-in-the-middle attack on the network, I can more or less assume that my communications are secure.
Right. And if you're on your home network, it's usually safe to assume there's not a physical tap connected to your network. Right?
My network has a physical tap.
Put it there. But yeah, so, exactly. You would be aware of it, right?
Yeah. The third thing is what you mentioned before, which is Wi-Fi penetration is iffy. I mean, everyone knows that one spot or two spots in the house where you just can't go.
Right.
Because if you go there, your laptop disconnects or your phone no longer gets Wi-Fi, or you see connection, but nothing ever happens.
Right. It's intermittent.
It's intermittent. And that's because there's different construction materials, and those different construction materials will reflect RF energy differently. It goes fine through drywall, but let's say you have some wet drywall. Wet drywall absorbs 2.4 gigahertz.
Right. I always hear Patrick Norton talk about it's like horsehair drywall or something like that. Or maybe even they use chicken wire at some point, and that's like being in a Faraday cage.
Mesh.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Mesh is horrible. And some old houses do still use mesh in their drywall and their stucco, which kills Wi-Fi. And remember, here's the big thing for 2.4, because 2.4 does penetrate well, but 2.4 gigahertz is the frequency at which water vibrates, which means water kills 2.4. Dead, gone.
Just like absorbs it completely.
Absorbs it completely. And that's how microwaves work. It generates signals at 2.4 gigahertz
and vibrates
the water molecules, which
that makes sense.
Causes heat.
Mm-hmm. And why my eyeballs started to burn.
don't burn.
Don't do that?
Don't. Okay. Number four. Now, for consumer level gear, management over Wi-Fi is nearly non-existent. Some of the higher level routers from Asus, from Synology, the ones that we've played with, will do things like individual quality of service management by MAC address.
Right.
But, I mean, not the lower level ones. And you definitely can't do things like individually assigned VLANs. Whereas even a relatively inexpensive home switch is going to support QoS. It will support VLANs. It will support a little bit of management. Mm-hmm. And once you start playing around with management, it's very hard to move back, because when you can define specifically where certain types of traffic are going to go, you start thinking, I want that all the time.
Right. No, the different an investment into a good router, it's hard to put into words like how much of it's no longer a pain in the ass to deal with, because now that I've been using a better router, where I'd say majority of my life I had just a router, it worked, you plug it in, the Wi-Fi sucked, and I always had to kind of fool around to try and get things to work the way I wanted to. Once I got a decent router with like a decent, good antennas on it and Wi-Fi and stuff, it was like day and night change on my network. Yeah. And be able to specify certain devices to give them priority. Like Xbox gets priority when I'm playing it, because I want, you know, I'm playing games on it or I'm watching movies on it. I don't want my bandwidth throttled at that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the other things that you're really going to like, and this goes with your installation, is the flexibility that you're offered when you wire. I always get this. How do I connect X to my wireless network? How do I connect Y to my wireless network? I'm not getting good signal. If you've got your house wired, you always have the option of dropping an access point at the end of that wire. Mm-hmm. So if there's a room that you absolutely need connectivity in, and now you're thinking of running a Wi-Fi extender or, you know, power over Ethernet over power, if you've already wired up and you've put two drops, you drop an access point on that thing and boom, you've got full connectivity. It's fantastic. Also, we talked about this last time. Remember how I told people in Networking 101 not to daisy chain their switches?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why you don't want to daisy chain your switch is because you're creating bottlenecks. That's a constraint.
Right.
Because each one of those ports, remember, 2 gigabits, unless you buy a 10 gig switch, in which case you have a lot of money and can we have some. But you've got 2 gigabits, one going up and one coming down,
right?
Which is fine. That's fine for a client. But now let's say I've got a 12-port switch. Mm-hmm. I've got 11 clients plus the one port going back to the main switch.
Still
one line. So all of those clients are now constrained to going through that 2 gigabits or 1 gigabit each way connection.
Right.
You don't want to do that. If you do premise wiring, if you wire up your own house, you have everything come back to the same panel. There's no daisy chaining. Now you have a patch panel with all the ports in your house, and every single one of them gets full advantage of the backplane of your main switch.
Yeah. I mean, if I had the advantage of designing my own home, that's the way I would do it. But I live in an apartment. I can't make a lot of those fundamental changes. So the way I have it laid out is router to switch, and then the switch sends out to Xbox, my PC, and I think one external storage unit that I have in NAS. So it is a little bit of a bottleneck.
Yeah.
But it hasn't affected me. It's much better than if I were trying to do Wi-Fi.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing there is you're going from you don't have any daisy chain switches.
Yeah.
So you're actually okay.
Okay, cool.
You're good. And along with the maintenance, something else to consider is when I helped to renovate my old family home here in Fremont, we did 4 wireless drops per port, and we had 4 boxes per room because we basically tore out the walls. We're like, if the walls are out,
might as well do it.
Let's wire everything. And the wonderful thing about that is we also put conduit, so we've got cables for SDI in case we want to do high definition video.
Right.
We've got network jacks that support all the security cameras that are around the property. And the fact that you have so many jacks and a fantastic management from a central patch panel means I can patch anything to anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having my own telephone switchboard. I just kind of geek out to that.
Well, yeah, that's definitely what you're into. But if you have the advantage of planning it out ahead of time and set it up properly, you can be set for decades or whatever. Because I remember even with my dad, we ran Cat5 through the whole house to every room. He went up in the attic, and I just helped him thread the cables. So he had the hard job. But I mean, that has lasted over a decade since we did that.
Do it right once, and it will last for a very long time.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, okay, let's go off the rails completely, Brian.
Sure. Why not? It's know-how.
When we started renovating the house, my old networking. Because when you tear the walls down, you can see everything that's there.
Yeah.
And you could see all the old networking I had done over the past 20 years. So growing up as a kid, learning how to network.
The different levels.
And you went from basically phone cable that I kind of made work for a network to Category 6 that was run the wrong way. It's interesting. You get kind of obsessive compulsive about this. It's like, I don't want any ugly wires.
The cable management.
Everything has to look beautiful. I mean, if you were to tear the walls open in the house now, everything looks so organized. Like all the cables look like racetracks.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of addicting.
I'm pretty sure there's a website or it's a subreddit that is it's like networking nirvana or something like that. But it's that it satisfies that OCD of cable management and just seeing how people have wired certain, like even I think in the back where the TriCaster is, like seeing the cables that are all properly in their spots and like not just a big bundle, like kind of makes me happy when I see that.
Right?
Yeah.
It shouldn't, but it does.
Yeah, it makes me feel better. It makes me at peace.
Okay, now there's one last thing that I actually think is pretty big. You have the ability to do it because you have borrowed a switch that...
it has power over Ethernet,
over Ethernet.
It's a really nice switch.
I don't know where
it came from.
This is actually huge, folks. PoE is one of my favorite things about having a wired network because it means it's one less thing that I have to have. I can push power and data over the same line.
Mm-hmm.
And for our house, for example, all of our security cameras are PoE enabled, which means we don't need a separate line for the power.
Right. Is there any compromise to that? Like, is there less of data transfer? It's just, oh, that's cool.
It's actually very well done. I've got a video for this. We're going to go back into the archives. On my other show, This Week in Enterprise Tech.
You have another show?
I have many shows.
What? Okay. I thought this was the only show you did.
I've been
felt special.
I've been hosting on you. I'm sorry.
You're such a horster. Hoster.
Now, and when we come back, we're going to take a look at some of the tools that we're actually going to be using for this. But before we go over to the video, let's go ahead and take a break for these messages. We'll be right back to the know-how action, but first let's take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Know-How. Now, imagine this. You protect your car. You protect your laptop. You protect your personal belongings, but do you protect your house? I mean, do you really protect your house with as much stuff as you've got in there? All your gadgets, all your gizmos, all your treasure, is your house as able to be protected as that $800 smartphone in your back pocket? Well, folks, with Ring, it can be. Now, Ring is a new way to think about home security. It's not just a way to keep people out. It's a way for you to have an interaction with the people who might be coming to your door, to your property. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer, and that's what they do. Over 1 million people are using their amazing Ring video doorbell to help protect their homes. Ring knows that home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there. That's why they've extended that same level of protection, that same level of interactivity that they first had with their Ring video doorbell to the entire home, the rest of your property. Things like the Ring floodlight cam. Now, just like Ring's video doorbell, the floodlight cam is a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone. It's got HD video and two-way audio, which means you can see what's going on and you can hear and speak to someone who maybe shouldn't be behind your home. You can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your home. If you don't like what you see, go ahead and press one button and have the authorities show up. And with Ring's floodlight cam, when things go bump in the night, you'll immediately know what it is. Whether you're home or away, the Ring floodlight cam lets you see exactly what's happening at your home. Ring floodlight cams offer the ultimate in home security with high visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. It was named Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017. Now, you can monitor every corner of your property with a Ring of Security kit. All of their kits include the Ring video doorbell and your choice of either 1, 2, or 3 floodlight cams. You can connect your Ring video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for added convenience, monitoring, and security. With Ring, you're always home. And right now, you can save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/knowhow. That's ring.com/knowhow. And we thank Ring for their support of Know-How. And we are back. Okay, Brian, so PoE is something that I very much believe in. I think it's a very useful tool. It's not just for enterprise anymore. It's for consumer use, because more and more of our consumer products are using PoE.
I'm trying to think of what consumer product. So you had mentioned security cameras.
Cameras, yep.
What else is there, though?
All of my Internet of Things devices are PoE.
What Internet of Things devices
so,
do you have?
So like all of the Arduinos that are network connected, Those are also PoE shields, right? Okay. Which is what you want, because you want the same cable providing power and data. You don't want to have the multiple lines to your IoT device.
Chances are, wherever you are running the line to your Internet of Things device, you're not going to have a power outlet with a USB cable that you want to plug in there too.
Precisely.
Okay.
Well, let's go ahead and take a look. We're going to jump over to Interop, which was a group that I used to work with that set up enterprise class networks, carrier class networks, to create one of the largest temporary networks in the world. I took a look at what they were doing over there, and I spoke with one of their engineers about the promise of PoE.
I'm Father Robert Balasair, the digital Jesuit, host of TWiET, This Week in Enterprise Tech on the TWiET Network. It's time for another edition of Stuff My IT Guy Says. I'm here at the Interop Warehouse in Brisbane, California, and this time I've brought a guest. I'm sitting next to Mr. Peter Chen, a technical marketing engineer from Netgear. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're going to help us go through all this stuff, because all this gear in front of me is PoE enabled. So tell me, Peter, what is PoE?
PoE stands for Power Over Ethernet, which literally is what it says it is. It provides power to devices that need it through your standard Ethernet cable.
Okay, now I would imagine that would add cost and complexity. I have to replace switches or add power injectors. Why would I want to go through all that trouble when, well, honestly, things kind of work well as they do now?
Take this IP camera, for example. In the past, if you had to get it to work, you would need two cables. One, Ethernet cable for your data, and you'd also need a power cable plus power adapter for the power. Now, this is all fine and dandy until you need to hook this up to the ceiling where there's no power socket to be found.
So it's really about ease of deployment. If I have a tough installation, it allows me to run a single cable rather than running multiple cables. Exactly. Now, that works for IP cameras, but it also works for something like this, which is an access point, which means that instead of running a cable for console, a cable for data, and a cable for power, I can run one cable and reduce my expenditure for deployment.
Oh, yeah.
It also means that I can use devices like this. IP phones are almost all PoE now, so I can run this phone off of one cable, which provides both its connectivity and its power. All right, now, tell me how it works. I understand that PoE sends out 48 volts, but obviously it doesn't do it all the time because then I'd have live wires all over my network, and that could be problematic.
Yeah, that could potentially burn down the office, so that, we don't want that.
Yeah, okay.
No. And that's where the 802.3AF PoE and 802.3AT PoE Plus standards come in.
Mm, okay.
It sort of regulates who gets how much power.
Right. Now, with those standards, there's a handshake. So essentially, let's say this camera. Mm-hmm. I plug this camera into this network, and what's going to happen is the switch will recognize it has a new device plugged in. It's going to send a short burst of power over to the camera and say, hey, do you support PoE? The camera will then say, yes, I support PoE. And the switch will say, okay, what kind of PoE do you want? And the camera will say, oh, I need AF or I need AT. And then the switch sends the appropriate amount.
Exactly.
Okay, now, tell me, what are the differences between classes of PoE? We've got AF, AT. I believe there's a couple of other intermediary steps, right?
Yeah, so the original AF standard supplied roughly up to 15 watts of power per port. As you can imagine, 15 watts is not a lot, and devices that are a little more power hungry could not be powered with that. So that's where the whole 802.3AT standard comes in. It basically doubles the amount of power that can be supplied by a single PoE port.
Right. So, for example, this camera, that camera, this phone could be powered off of 15 watts, but this array definitely couldn't.
Definitely not.
Okay. Now, where do we see this going? Because obviously, we're not going to keep increasing the amount of voltage that we send over PoE, but we are seeing PoE included in pretty much every piece of enterprise gear. When do we start to see this, well, trickle down into the consumer side? I mean, we've already got it in a few cameras, but when does everything start to be powered over the same cable that it gets its data from?
Well, actually, in the past couple of years, if you watch TV at all, you'll see a lot of home surveillance packages being offered by maybe your local cable provider. With that, I imagine that there's going to be a ton of surveillance cameras being installed to, you know, more and more homes all over the world. And naturally, PoE would be the obvious choice for flexible deployment.
Okay. So there you have it. That's what PoE is. That's what it does. That's how it works. Now, you need to pick up some of these devices just to try it out for yourself. Personally, I always carry around this Netgear ProSafe PoE switch so that I have the ability to power my phone and my cameras when I'm on the go. It might be the thing for your network. I'm Father Robert Ballasair. This is Stuff My IT Guy Says, and you've just been learning.
I want to thank Curtis Bryant. He's the one who actually made the music for this. Remember, this is a segment from like 4 years ago. And Curtis, when I first joined the Twit TV network, we were actually on the same episode of TNT together.
Oh, that's funny.
It was the viewer call-in, the end of the year viewer call-in show. Okay. And so it was Curtis and I, and then I started working with TWiT. He's like, hey, you want me to make you some music? I'm like, okay.
It wasn't so much the music as the little text graphics floating around
I've
the
gotten
screen,
better but... at my job since 4 years ago. I'll say that.
I liked it a lot more because of that. I don't want it to be anything other than that ever.
You know, Brian, the other thing about that video is it made me remember I used to have this really nice small Netgear PoE
that
switch.
That looks really familiar.
Yeah, I can't find it anymore. It's gone.
That's strange. Mm. It kind of looks like something I have in my living room, but it couldn't possibly be the same one.
No, not at all. Never. That's I actually do have a PoE device here that I want to show you. This is actually one of my favorite all-time PoE devices. This is a gigabit switch from 3Com. This is actually a four-port switch that's managed. So this does VLANs, this does policy. I can do everything. But my favorite part is it's PoE. So what I've got here is what's called a PoE injector. And
it looks
this
like
is
a power brick.
It is a power brick. So you have network in, and then you have one cable going out into the uplink. And this, actually, as you here, let's go to my close-up here.
Get real
there
close.
You go. It's all powered on,
and it's just one cable.
So this is a really good example. These were originally designed back in the days where offices had maybe one jack, mm-hmm. and now they had a switch at every jack.
Right.
Well, this actually attaches to the port, the gang port, and allows you to install this into the wall.
Oh, cool.
So every wall socket becomes a four-port managed switch.
That's smart. Yeah. I like that.
And I use these at my home network because since they do speak VLAN, mm-hmm. this allows me, every time someone plugs into the network, they only see the gateway. They see nothing else because every new device gets a new VLAN off the main switch.
You're such a security snob.
I like what I like.
No, I don't blame you. That's a smart way of doing it.
There's bad people out there always trying to mess with my network.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
Oh, I don't know. Just because one of my switches is missing.
One of your switches is missing? Yeah. You don't seem bitter about
that
at all.
No, it's
you
I'm
want
happy
your switch back?
Share my switches.
Never share switch. Friends don't share switches.
Okay, so that's a PoE device. Now, what we need to do, Brian, mm-hmm. is we need to actually start looking at the things that we want to have in our premise networking kit. Because people have asked us a lot, should I buy this? Should I buy? Let me say off the bat, if you're just starting out, there's no need to buy yourself the really expensive tools. For example, I gave you a crimper there if you want to show it off to people. That's a $160 crimper.
I should stop playing with it.
You should. Well, I mean, look, that's a $160 crimper. This is an $8 crimper. But they do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And in fact, this is probably easier to use for some beginners than that.
Right. But you probably have this because you were doing a lot of network stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But let's run it down. The first thing you're going to need are some sort of cable crimpers. We've got a link here. These are pretty good. This is not the cheapest you can get, but it's also way not the most expensive. It lasts a long time. I've played it with a lot of TrendNet gear. You need something that will do RJ45. The reason why that one's so expensive is because that has interchangeable dies. So I could change the crimp based on what kind of plugs I'm using.
I see.
These are all fixed. So they will crimp and they will kind of work with different effectiveness.
That's sort of super fancy.
Right.
Got it.
The other thing you're going to need are a set of diagonal cutters. Don't just use scissors. You actually want to get something that was designed to cut wire. And something else, hide these.
Wow.
Don't let anyone else use them because what you end up doing is they do things like they're cutting rebar or they're cutting through things like coat hangers.
Or some pruning in the garden.
Yeah, don't.
Don't use them for that.
This is for one thing. This is for your networking. Keep this in your networking bag. And you don't want them to dull it. You don't want them to kill this because what's going to end up happening is instead of cutting through wires, you end up tearing them.
Pinch
you don't want to tear. You want to cut.
Okay.
We've got a link for these here. I don't skimp on my diagonal cutters. This is actually like a $40 set. You can get cheaper ones, but yeah, get yourself.
But you buy one pair of diagonal cutters and you have them for life.
As long as you don't let anyone else use them.
Can I see those real quick?
No.
All right, I was testing you.
The other thing you're going to need is some sort of cable tester. And again, many different levels. This is a super inexpensive one. This is a $7 cable tester. Essentially, all you need is something that will pass voltage through all eight of the wires inside of your category 5 or 6 cable and tell you if it's going across. I've got a couple of not as inexpensive. This is a fluke. Mm-hmm. What I like about this is also a toner. So what you can do is you can plug this side into the cable, and let's say you have a bundle of cables, you can actually turn on the probe and just pass along the outside of the insulation, and you'll start hearing the tone when you're getting to the right one. And in fact, let me demonstrate what that looks like or sounds like, actually.
Right. But this is some pretty serious network premising stuff. Like,
most people aren't going to do this.
If you were...
See? So as you get closer to the cable, it gets louder and louder and tells you, okay, that's the cable I'm looking for.
So if it was in a pile of wires, you could then discern.
Right. You kind of hear the noise on all of them, but as you when you touch the casing of the one that it is, it'll get really loud. You go, that's the one.
So if you're doing like a business and there's 1,000 computer cables that you're looking at.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that part of the functionality is nice, but probably not going to be needed for your home. But what it does do and what you would use this for is it does a cable map. So if I turn this to cable mapping like so, I can take my probe and I can turn this to the cable map as well, like this.
Fluke network.
And what you're hearing is it's actually these lights. So it's going through every cable. And as long as I hear that boop, boop, boop,
then
boop,
that boop, cable is connected in.
That's good. Right. Mm. If I hear that bloop, that means there's something that's missing.
Huh. I think I've heard that noise before on a cable that I may have made.
Like all the cables you've ever made.
All the cables I've ever made? Maybe not all of them.
No, not all of them. Just some of them.
I ruined cables for demonstration purposes, which I will not get wrong on this episode
if that's
what we're doing.
But you know what? In fact, I'm going to leave that with you. I'm going to put that right in the middle. This is something a bit higher end. This used to be incredibly expensive back in the day. This was like a $1,500 tool.
So back in the day for you, we're like...
Not like the 60s.
All right, continue.
But what I like about this net tool, if you go to the close-up, is this doesn't provide just testing. This will also do things like it'll ping to IP servers outside. It will also do the time division. So if I have a break in the cable, this won't just tell me that the signal is not going through. It will actually tell me at what distance is the break.
Because what will happen is
it will send the signal down the cable. When it hits the break, the signal bounces.
And it can judge from that how far it is.
It'll take the time that it took for the signal to bounce back, divide it by two, multiply that by the speed of the pulse through the wire, and you get the exact distance at which the break exists.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But you can get these on eBay now, though.
Yeah?
I think I bought this one for like $200.
All right. What were they originally?
$1,500. Ha! Yeah, they're expensive. Fluke tools tend to be a bit expensive.
They don't fluke around.
Yep. Wow. All right. Good stuff. The other thing you're going to need is a punch down tool. Super simple. It's also known as an impact tool. It allows you to punch. So I can push this into a keystone jack system, and I keep doing this until when I hear that click, it means what it just did was it used up the stored force to punch it.
Right.
And it gives you a nice clean cut or a nice clean impact into a keystone system.
I see. And that is where it cuts kind of the sleeve around the wire.
Correct.
And then leaves it, doesn't cut the wire, but it leaves it bare.
Yeah,
and
one thing,
the middle,
if you go to the close up here, Alex. My close up. There you go. So if you look at these systems, there's a blade. And you can, if I trigger this, I can take the blade. It's not easy. There we go.
So easy.
You can take
to
the
use.
Blade out. One side is flat, so this is no cut. This side, there's a cut. This side is a cut, which means when you're punching your keystone jack, you want to make sure that the cut side is away from the cable, because otherwise you're cutting the cable as you punch it in.
Oops.
Yeah. This is just to keep it clean. So what we'll do is as you punch it down, it will cut off the excess.
Okay.
All right. So let's go. Hold on. Boom. What?
And that costs?
These are cheap. I'm about $20, $17. I think Alex already showed the link.
There. Okay. Yeah.
Now, that's all the major tools. So you need cutters, you need crimpers, you need a punch down tool, you need something to test it. But there are a couple other bits and bobbins that I like to have in my kit.
Yeah.
The first is this. These are Category 5 barrel connectors. And I've got, actually, here, let me take
one
of those here. No, you got the black one too.
Ooh, cool.
Two different styles. These just allow you to barrel connect to RJ45 connectors. Incredibly useful to have these in your kit because it means that you can extend cables, or I can change the sex of the cable because I need to, say, hook it up to a tester.
Right.
I always have at least five or six of these things in my kit at any given time.
Now, if you did use these to extend a cable, is there any compromise of like the data going over?
Oh. Absolutely not. As long as you don't go beyond the specifications of Ethernet, which is 330 feet.
Right.
So total is 330 feet. Maybe this might knock a foot off because there's a little bit of electrical resistance, but not nearly enough to make a major difference in the signal, the connection that you're getting.
And for power over Ethernet, is that the same length?
Thing. Okay. Yeah. So. This is and actually, people ask this all the time. They ask me if PoE will affect the signal.
Yeah.
What we found, and I still can't explain this, is the runs that we've done for interop, where we ran PoE, the signal maintained its coherence past 330 feet. There's something about having power running in the same lines that actually decreases the amount of crosstalk that's interfering with your signal.
It's interesting.
Of course, that just might be the way we set up our network. I don't know.
It's not
gospel. That's not Bible, but it worked for us.
Okay.
The other thing you're going to want, and this is sort of a specialty piece, is this a Category 6 crossover cable. If you go to the link for that, all this does is it reverses the pairs. Because and we're going to show you this. When we're punching down, there's the send pair and there's the listen pair. Mm-hmm. This reverses it. Normally, it's straight across. So the send pair on the head is the send pair on the end. Mm-hmm. The receive pair on the head is the receive pair on the end. This flips them so that you can actually cross over.
Now, a crossover cable.
Yeah. You used to need these all the time before switches and computers started doing what's called auto MDX. They will cross over their own pairs.
Interesting. Okay.
But every once in a while, you'll get a really old piece of gear that's not doing it, and a crossover cable will save you from having to cut the cable and then re-splice it.
All right. So you know how I told you me and my dad set up the network at my family's home?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure when we set up the cable that we were hooking up to the original Xbox, we had to make sure it was a crossover cable so that I could then use Xbox Live on it.
Yeah, yeah. And like the really, really old switches, in fact, you know, back to the hubs,
yeah,
they used to have a button. So like port one, you could switch between regular and crossover. You had to push the button. And then they got smart. They're like, let's it just enable matter. That on all ports. And it will just say, oh, yeah. I'm receiving on the send side. Well, I'll just swap the pins.
Yeah,
you
that's
can do
so
that
much
in
easier.
Software.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool.
All right. So the other thing you're going to want to do is get yourself, and you probably have this already, a USB 3.0 gig 110 adapter. These run anywhere from $10 up to $50 based on how good you want this. But especially if you're going to be diagnosing with a laptop, just make sure that's in your kit. That's always something to have.
I need to get one of those.
Yeah. The other thing you're going to want is, I kind of live by this, it's a PoE detector. These are a little pricey. In fact, the one that I have marked here is $30, but it can save you if you are dealing with a network with PoE. In fact, let me go ahead and pull this. What this will do is it will not only tell you that you have PoE present, it will tell you what kind of PoE you have. So if you look at this, actually, let me unplug this. So, and I remember what we said in the video. When you connect a PoE device, the switch or the power sender is going to send a very low voltage to the device to power it up enough for it to ask, do you support PoE? If it hears back on what type of PoE it will send, then you start to receive power. So this will actually tell me, is this 1236, 45, or 78? Those are the different types of PoE I can receive. And, you know, this is actually just something that's useful to have because you can plug it into a patch panel. You can plug it into a patch cable and figure out if that is supposed to support PoE. And now you know if it's the device or the cable or the patch.
I can see that being pretty handy, but you said it's expensive?
It's $30.
Okay.
So again, kind of specialized. I have it in my bag. You don't necessarily have to.
Understand.
This, I would suggest you have it in your bag because this is kind of life-saving. A non-contact voltage detector. This happens all the time in installations that I haven't done where someone does something stupid and like now they're sending voltage over a Category 5 cable or Category 6 cable.
How do you accidentally do that?
Because someone says, hey, you know what? I've got free pairs, so I'm going to send AC power down to one of the PEDs. It sounds stupid and it is stupid and I would never do that. But people have done that. And cutting into a cable that has live power going, don't do that. So what this will do is this will actually tell me, so if you look at it, it's, there you go. So it's got a little light. Mm-hmm. But this will tell me if there's voltage coming over the line that I should have to worry about. Let's see if I can get it to trigger. And it's if you go back to the close-up. So if I do this, see how I get a little red that.
Yeah.
So that's telling me, no, there's AC voltage there. Don't cut into that. And I don't have to cut through the sheathing. It just tells me.
How does it know?
Because it's smart, Brian.
All right. I believe you. It's just magic.
It's smart. And again, these are about $30, but $30 is not a lot compared to a hospital bill for getting electrocuted.
Oof. Yeah. Or a funeral bill.
Funeral bill. Yeah. So those are the bits and the bobbins that I keep in my kit.
Okay.
Again, most of the time I keep it there just because I've had them for years and years and years.
Right.
This is a broken pair of crimpers, but it still kind of works. I needed to give Brian
a
handicap.
If it ain't completely broke, don't throw it away.
Precisely. And then the last bit are consumables. And my consumables are always Keystone Jacks and the individual heads for the RJ45. Now, there are different types of heads. There are the ones that require sleeves, which I absolutely hate. Some people swear by them. But I prefer the one where you just directly insert the wires and then crimp it down.
Do you find that that's easier to put together? Is that why you prefer them?
Yeah. For me, it's just the way that I've worked. Now, if you are looking for an all-in-one kit, you don't want to buy all these parts individually. Alex, I think we have a link there for this. This is super, super cheap. This is $16 that will give you the crimper, a tester, a stripper, and the heads. So if you just want to start playing around with your wiring skills, this is a really good deal.
All right. I like that. I'll probably pick something up like that.
All right. So, Brian, we've got the kit out of the way.
Am I ready to do some cabling? Let's do it. Yeah.
We're going to do this in just a bit.
Test it, right?
But first, let's take a break for these messages.
Previously on Twit.
There's good touch, there's bad touch, and there's force touch.
And there's 3D touch.
We're going to talk about the latter two.
Mm-hmm.
On the show today.
Mm-hmm. Many other shows you can watch to talk about the first two.
Windows Weekly.
Surface laptop is the most important Surface device ever? You said that, Paul.
I know. It sounds ridiculous. Give it a second. Hold on. Let it seep in a little bit. It will get better.
It's seeping, all right.
Not only does this thing have a future, but it's the core of the platform. It's the proof point for what Microsoft has been trying to show us.
MacBreak Weekly.
Merriam-Webster, the dictionary company, has added a new word. The word is sheeple. The example, Apple debuted a battery case for the juice-sucking iPhone, an ungainly, lumpy case the sheeple will happily shell out $99 for.
That seems a little bit editorial for a reference, but don't you think?
The new screensavers.
Facebook Spaces, is that it?
Yep, open up the app.
Oh, look at that.
Oh.
Upside-down penguins.
Is that what's
upside
happening?
Down for you?
They are right side up for me, and they are gigantic.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to get
eaten. Watch out, he's going to eat your head.
Twit. It keeps going and going and going.
It's like a booger. I can't get rid of it. What happened? Did we crash it?
Whoa, you just disappeared in like a burst of emojis. I wish you would have seen what I saw.
Whoa, you did the same thing.
How did you do that?
I don't know how you just
That's
did that.
Cool.
And we're back. Okay, Brian. So I've got this from last time. This is a little something that I made.
Yeah.
This absolutely has an RJ45 connector on one side. It's got a Keystone Jack on the other.
Right.
That is pre-made. I know one of those heads, that head is right.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is not.
Has nothing on it.
Do you want to do Keystone or do you want to do crimping?
I want to do crimping.
All right. So here's a head for you.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut, even though this cable works, I'm going to cut this off because you know what, Brian? That's the kind of love I got for you, bro.
Ah!
Okay, so this cable is no longer good. What we need to do first is we need to strip away enough insulation so that we can get at the wires. But here's the trick. You don't want to nick any of the wires. If you nick the wires on the inside,
yeah.
You got to start over because you've just created a short.
Okay. That makes sense. Do you want the nice one?
No. I'm going to use the crappy one. You can use the nice one. Okay, if you go to my close-up. Oh, there we go. Close up. All right. So I've got a blade here. You've got a blade on your cutter as well. You don't want to go all the way down. I'm going to go very lightly. I'm just going to kind of score the edges, and I'm going to turn the cable just enough so I can cut through that outer insulation like so. Once I've got it, you can just pull it. Check really quickly. Go around all the cables to make sure that you haven't stripped away any of that insulation. Now, for premise wiring, there's normally this. This is a little bit of a fiberglass wire. It allows it to have a little extra strength so that it's not when you pull on the cable, you're not pulling on the wires, you're pulling on the fiberglass.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So once I've got my four pairs, because category 5 and 6 all have four pairs, there's an order to this. We're going to be using the standard for this. It's called the T568 wiring standard. We're using the B spec.
Okay.
In the B spec, what I want to do is I want to unwind these a little bit, and then I'm going to go white orange, orange, white green, blue, white blue, green, white brown, brown. So it's always white color, white color, white color, white color.
Okay. Why did they have to use orange and brown? They're kind of close.
They did it to confuse you.
Yeah, right?
So in this particular one right now, I've got this is brown, blue, orange, and green. So I'm going to preset it. So I want orange first, then I'm going to want green, then I'm going to want blue, then I'm going to want brown. So let's just get them into the order that I want them in when the cable's finished.
Okay.
Now, the temptation is going to be to unwind these cables entirely. You don't want to unwind them too much, because what's going to happen is if you have more than of about a quarter of an inch of unwind, non-twisted, you're actually degrading the signal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So basically unwind it down to this insulation, not more. So I'm going to do this. So just one finger. Mm-hmm. I'm going to unwind. So that's my orange. This is my green.
Orange.
So I'm going to go white, orange, orange, white, green, then blue. There's a little surprise there. Then white, blue, then green, then white, brown, then brown. So this is what it should look like, man. That's, you want to fan it out. So here I'm going white, orange, orange, white, green, blue, white, blue, green, white, brown, brown.
All right. White, orange, orange, white, green, green, white, was it blue next? White, blue, and then white, brown, brown.
Yeah. But remember, it's white, orange, orange, white, green, then blue, then white, blue, then green.
Okay.
That's the standard. And that was one of the original ways to keep it out from a crosstalk. Now, once I have these lined up the way I want them, here's a trick. So you kind of put them next to each other. Get them straight. They're not going to quite fit. So what you do is you grab it like this, and you kind of shimmy it. And when you shimmy, what's going to happen is the cables will just kind of naturally line up.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what you want.
Okay.
Right. Now, before I put them into the head, you double check to make sure that the wires are in the right order. Again, so I've got white, orange, orange, white, green, blue, white, blue, green, white, brown, brown. So I'm in the right order. Okay. Now what I want to do is I want to even out the top of these lines. I want them to be nice and straight for when I put them into the jack. So I'm going to take my clippers, and about a quarter of an inch up from the base there, I'm going to go ahead and snip straight across like so. There we go. So that's what I want it to look like. Does yours look like that, dear Brian?
It's getting there. I'm in the shimmying process now.
Shimmy is my favorite part.
Shimmy, 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 shimmy.
Yeah, shimmy, 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 shimmy.
Okay.
All right. So now here's the fun part. You're going to take this. You're going to keep a little bit of tension so that the wires don't go out of order. Mm-hmm. And they go all the way into the head. There's individual channels in here that will hold the wires. Now, if I didn't have a microphone in my face, what I could do is I could actually take a look again and make sure that those are in the right order. But I don't. I can't get the microphone out of my face, so I'm just going to crimp this and hope for the best.
The best.
Now, mine's a really old, natty crimper, so I have to do it multiple times. You should be able to do it just once.
Okay. So copper, or I don't know, fin side up or fin side down?
Fin side up. You always want to be looking at the pins, because that's how you're going to insert it.
Okay.
So now I'm going to test mine, and we're going to see what it sounds like, or we're going to hear what it sounds like, Brian.
I need to get this closer to my face.
All right, so let's turn that on. And let's hear the sounds of shame.
Shame.
Wait, hold on. Oh, how about that?
Oh, perfect on his first try.
More time.
No big deal.
It's my beat. It's my jam, Brian. It's called Perfect Cable Test. What?
Mr. Bragger. Okay. I've been doing this my whole life.
All right, so while you work on that, I'm going to show you what the other cable tester looks like. And this is actually kind of cool. So what I can do is I can actually put this. This is a little cable probe. for my Fluke tester, for my my net tool, and it's going to bounce signal off of it. There we go. So if I auto test, it will show me distance, although this is a little too short for it to show distance properly. And it will actually show, make sure that all the pairs are going to where they're supposed to be. And 3, 2, 1. There we go. So it knows, all it knows is it's less than 50 feet because it's too short for the time division to work properly. But that's what you want to see. You want to see all the lines going straight across. That one's broken because there is no insulation pair. All eight are going straight across. This is a good cable.
So what happens if you put it into the crimper and then the cables come out before you crimp?
Okay.
How do you get it out?
Use the diagonal cutter and like just lightly nick or the plastic and then pull it back. There we go. You know what? Let's give you a fresh head.
No.
That head. Did you crimp it at all?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
So it should be okay, right?
Because once you, when you crimp it, what you're doing is you're actually forcing those little pins, those tines,
into the wire.
And once they're down, they don't come back up.
All right.
Okay. You know what? I don't want to put too much pressure on Brian. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead. I think I should do another one.
You're going to do another one in the time that I've done one.
You know what? Let's up the difficulty. We're going to use the store made cable. If you give me the crimper.
Wait, this crimper?
No, the cutter. We call dinks.
Diagonal cutters.
Okay. So toss that away. So this is actually something that a lot of you will have, where you have a cable that's got a bad head, like you've broken the tab off the head. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? It's kind of easy for you to replace that. All right. So strip. There we go. And look at that. So this one even has this this little plastic sheathing inside of it. Hmm. That's the support, the centerpiece.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And yeah, I don't want that.
All right. So I'm going to crimp this now, Padre.
Go, okay. Brian.
On this nice crimper, I have no excuses.
This one's easier to see. Look, it's so I got orange, then green, then blue, then brown.
I think I crimped.
Okay. So that's my orange. That's my green.
Why isn't it releasing?
It's not really. It's a ratchet crimp. So you have to hit the release. You have to go all the way in before it comes back out. It's like a ratchet on the seatbelt in your car.
I see. Okay, got it out. Yeah, that looks normal.
All right.
I think.
You're doing a great
Where's
job.
Where's my
man.
Fluke? I need you're to
doing,
try this.
You're doing a great job.
This is the one to try, right?
You want to try with this one first. That one. Yeah.
This is going to be so bad.
Hey, believe in yourself. I believe in you, Brian.
And then,
it's going to be perfect the first time you turn it on. Okay. Well, you need to hook up the other side.
Okay, that makes sense. It's making noises at me.
Okay. No, you want to turn it to cable map. All the way over to cable map. No, cable map.
It's over. Cable map. Other directions. Is that bad?
That's not good. The bong is a sad sound, is it not?
3 is bad, 1 is bad, 8 is bad.
Okay, so there's a little bit of badness in there. Just a little bit. So here, what you want to do is go ahead and plug one side of your cable into this and the other side into that and run an auto test, and it will show you what is connected to what.
All right.
Because I'm thinking you probably just have some cross cables in there. You can fix this, Brian. This is all you, man.
It can't be fixed. I think what might have happened is that the wires didn't go all the way down to the metal part, but yeah, not 100%
that's
sure.
That's quite possible. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and do the second connector, like so.
Oop. Auto test.
These are working. Stranded instead of solid. This makes them a little more working. Finicky.
Working.
There we go.
What does it say? It says it's less than 50 feet.
Okay, and now move over. And so we'll use the arrow key, move over to the right, to the right, to the right, the other right. There we go, right. I can't see because you got it.
Oh, it's right.
Too much glare.
Oh,
okay,
sorry.
And hit okay or select.
Is that bad? Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing at this?
Okay, ideally, it should be straight across.
So I got some of the wires mixed up, huh?
That's like a super special crossover cable, man.
Again, I did it again. I need to practice this.
Okay,
it's not easy on camera. That's the problem.
It's not. It's hard. I know. I just hey. I feel.
Right. So one of the sides was right though, because
here's my shame. I probably just messed up this cable here. If you can hand me that,
there you go.
Let's hear the tones of shame, Brian.
I'm gonna redo mine.
Bong. Oh, see, I have one bad one.
Tone of shame.
That's my eight. It's not crimped all the way. Hold on. I can fix this, Brian.
Did I not crimp mine properly? Like, one of the heads looks different than the other.
Yeah, the head should look the same. They're exactly backwards.
Exactly backwards.
You know what, Brian? I'm going to do you a favor here. All right. There we go.
My connectors are gone. My career in IT is ruined.
No. I see what happened. What happened was the last two pairs flipped on me. So,
on yours?
On mine.
On mine, they are just terrible.
They're just awful. They're no bueno. Okay, so go ahead and work on that. There's one last little bit that I want to show you, which is this. This is the Keystone jack. This allows me to, if you go to the close-up, to put in wires. So on this side, I've got, I'm using the B pattern. So orange, white orange, green, white green, blue, white brown. So that's the order I have to put these in. In fact, that's what I'm going to do with this cable, since I messed up the first termination. But see, Brian, I made a mistake too.
We all make mistakes.
We all make mistakes, Brian.
I feel so much better now.
Right?
Don't you? And if I nicked one of the shielding on one of the wires, I should just
start again. Yeah. So strip down further. It's going to head off because you're not going to remember that.
Yeah.
You're going to start having a flaky cable and you're not going to know why.
Right.
And then you're going to go, oh, it's because I nicked
one of the cables.
I want orange and green on one side. I want brown and blue on the other side. So I'm going to untangle these or untwist them like so.
We're learning. It's all part of the process.
It's been 2 to 3 years since we've done these episodes on Know-How. So, yeah, we haven't done this for a while. And I don't have great cause for termination anymore because my network's done. It works. I don't have to keep cutting cables.
I do, though. So I need to get good at this because I have a giant just wound cable underneath my desk.
You want to take the tools home, Brian?
I'll get my own kit.
No, you can take my tools. It's fine.
Well, you remember what happened with your Switch?
Right? But you know what? I'm happy to share because you're my bro.
I appreciate that. I'm trying to learn here. Okay, so blue.
Okay, so
orange.
Well, I do this. So I'm going to be putting these into the right slots. It's white, green, and then green. And then orange and orange. Yeah, take your time when you're doing this spot because this is frustration tends to set in and then you make bad terminations. And especially with the Keystone jack, you always want to be worrying about untwisting too much because it gets really, really easy for you to untwist everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the untwist continues down into the cable. And next thing you know, you've got inches of untwisted wire and it destroys it. It'll make a connection, but now, you know, suddenly your bandwidth is nothing. All right, so when I have this, there we go. That's that's supposedly in the right way. So I'm going to double check. Brown, white brown, brown, white blue, blue, white green, green, white orange, orange. Now I'm going to use the impact tool with the cutting side to do this. There we go. Come on, camera.
There you go.
Remember, make sure the cutting is on the outside. Mm-hmm. And hold on. I have to hold this properly or it will not work.
It's a satisfying.
It's what you get trying to destroy my network.
Blue, white, blue. Get back over there, white, blue.
Technically, you only have to do it once, but I'm like, you know, as long as I'm in there.
Might as well get it done. All right. White, orange, orange, white, green, blue,
oh, white, that blue. That did not cut really well.
Green.
My cutter blade is kind of dull. Okay. But let's see if it worked.
Can I have another head jack thing? Is it in here?
Yeah. Cool. I'm going to take your beautiful... Seriously, I want to... Here, wait. Can you go in close on this, Alex?
Do we really need to... What?
It is exactly reversed. Like, one is 8, 2 is 7.
So I just had the head flipped around.
Well, then you also have, like, broken connectors at 2, 4, 5, 6.
It's impressive. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is I didn't know that was actually possible. But, okay, awesome.
I found a way.
Let's see. See if I terminated this properly, which I probably did not, but we'll see.
I think you gave me a cable with a bad head jack.
My 7 is bad.
I think you gave me a cable that was doomed to fail because you wanted the laughs.
Did I?
No.
I mean, I wouldn't put it past me, but I don't think I did.
I don't think you did.
I gave you the good crimper.
I know. I failed on my own.
Oh, actually, that's why the cable came back out. There's also a little thing that allows you to sort of force it down. Let's see if I can make this work again. Because what happened was I moved it enough where the wires jump back out. The problem is this cable is not solid strand. It's stranded, not solid.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't stick as well. There we go. Okay, so this is a perfect cable. This goes straight across on all 8. So I'm going from a terminated head to a terminated Keystone jack. Okay, Brian, so that's 3 cables.
So this is going to be a perfect cable, just so you know. Because I am fairly certain that I just...
You already did the other head, right?
Still on the first head. Hold on.
It's okay. It's, hey, you know what?
Wanted to get it right.
It's about the journey. It's not about the destination.
It's going to be a really long journey. It's like watching Lord of the Rings here. A lot of walking.
Okay, we got to close this up. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I do want to mention 2 things. First... is the fact that if you are in the Bay Area, guess what? On the 19th, Friday, May 19th,
mm-hmm.
TWiT is going to be at Maker Faire in San Mateo. That's right. Leo Laporte is going to be out there. What we want you to do is come on by. Come say hi. Get some TWiT swag. Say hi to Leo. Get us an autograph. But more importantly, bring your Maker stuff. Anything that you've built, anything that you're proud of, bring it in. Because we want to film it. We want to put it on Know How.
I'm going to have my cable there with me because I'm going to be proud of this cable.
Actually,
once I get the other head
here's
on.
A challenge. If you're coming to Maker Faire, bring a cable that you've made.
We're going to
take pictures of all of them, and then we're going to put it alongside a picture of Brian's test.
We'll test them out. Make sure your cables are good.
Finally, we do have a parting shot. I did want to show this. Hey, Brian, you got to read this down. This is from Stefan Vermilia.
Stefan? Okay.
But he's got a project that he wanted to show off. You want to go ahead and do the honors?
Yeah, sure. So Stefan asks, hey, Brian Burnett, you wanted to see a goggle completed. I think my version 2 goggles turned out better than your broken robot look. Oh, really? I made these goggles for my niece who went to the 2017 First Robotics Championship in St. Louis this past weekend. She received a lot of compliments for my mod. I modeled and printed 2 team logos, then glued them to both sides for some added splash. Thank you, Father Robert Ballister and Brian, for showing me what to do and not to do. And what not to complete a project like this. Keep them coming.
If you go to the close-up, these are beautiful. You did such a good job. I mean, this is what we want to see. You took the project and you expanded upon them. If you'll notice, he's got even more so gears. He's like loaded this thing up with brass gears. And look at that. The team logo on the side. That's hot. That's yes.
Oh, yes. Great. Now that is really great. I'm glad that somebody did it right.
But do you have a double stack?
What?
You shouldn't. This is stupid. But no. Thank you very much for showing off your project. If you've done a build of the steampunk goggles or anything that we have here on Know How, please send us pictures, send us videos, because we love to show off your work.
We do. Now, even if you're kind of braggy about it.
Yeah. Go figure.
Which is fine.
Now, if you want to find out anything else that we did on this show, from the links to the products that we showed off to kind of step-by-step instructions, you can always get them at our show notes. And Brian, where did they find those?
Oh, they can find them at twit.tv/KH. And not only will you find the show notes, but you'll find the links for all the stuff that we talked about. And also, which pairs go with what? It's white, orange,
He's
orange.
Still feeling that. Also, don't forget, you can find us on the socials. Specifically, you can find us on Google Plus. Yes, Google Plus still does exist. And now that most of the spammers have gone away, it's a really, really good forum for discussion. Just go to Google Plus and look for Know How. There's a very short approval process so we can keep out those aforementioned spammer accounts. But once you're in, you get access to over 11,000 know-it-alls. That's our Kitas, people who are on every stage of their maker journey from noob all the way up to experienced. Now, you can come in. You can ask questions. You can answer questions. You can give us pictures of your projects and maybe give us an idea for something for the future of Know How. Just go to Google Plus and look for Know How.
That's right. And when you're posting on Google Plus, you don't have to give us the how not to do it and do it like we do for you. But if you want to find out if this cable actually works later, the best place to find that out will be on Twitter. And you can follow me at @cranky_hippo.
And you can find me at @PadreSJ. And you can find the third member of our team, the man who sits behind the desk. Thank you for the screenshot. That's fantastic. That's got to be our...
that's going to be the show
that's gonna be
image.
The thumbnail. But you can find him at ANELF3. That's ANELF3. That's Twitter at ANELF3. Oh, and by the way, what is his name?
Stefan.
Stefan. You should find Stefan at ANELF3.
Excuse me, Padre. That's pronounced Alex.
I'm sorry. Oh. That doesn't sound European
I've been
enough.
Getting it wrong all these years.
Stefan sounds pretty...
Stefan Gumpel. Or right? What was it? Dean Gumpel. It sounds like Dean. Dean. Like if he was...
Yeah, I could do Dean. All right, Dean Gumpel. You can find Dean Gumpel at twitter.com/ANELF3. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how...
Go wire it. Go network it. I'm going to get this right.
You will. And seriously, you have to tweet that out.